Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Kudzu Vine, the first Sunday in July. This is Tim Shifley. If you called it expecting to hear David is still on vacation. He will be back with us next Sunday, I promise, but Scott Aitman is with again. Good evening, Scott.
Good evening, Tim, and everybody else.
All right, and now tonight, and this is the third time we've done this, for you listeners, we will be having another one of our candidate forums. The featured candidates tonight are running for the Public Service Commission in the North region. And they should be joining us momentarily. As a matter of fact, we have a caller on the line. Hello.
Tim, are you talking to me? This is Catherine.
Oh, hey, Catherine, and welcome.
I'm on my cell phone because we ran into that really bad weather flying back into Atlanta, so we were in Knoxville for a couple hours, and we just landed. So I'm in my car on the way home. I'll be home in about 10 minutes. I'm going to call back in when I get home.
Okay, Catherine, we'll look for you there.
I'm really sorry I'm late. I had this all planned so I wouldn't be, but I'll talk to you
soon.
Okay, no problem. Thank you. Bye.
All right. So now, Scott, we know where Catherine is, and she'll be joining us in about 10 minutes, as will both of our candidates, but... While we're waiting, in the meantime, we're going to begin by discussing some of the latest political news. And we don't talk about this guy very much, but I really want to talk about him for a little bit tonight. U.S. Senate candidate Rand Knight. He keeps getting big endorsements. Now it's the NEA that's endorsed him. And I just want to ask you something, Scott. Is it time for everyone to look at this guy as a top-tier candidate?
It's tough to say one way or the other. I mean, he's certainly starting to get the endorsements of a top-tier candidate. But, Dr. Knight has ran a terrific campaign. He was one of the earliest people to file for the office. And he's ran a grassroots effort himself primarily. I mean, I know he's got a small staff. But, he's put a lot of himself into this, and because of that, I think it's made up for any, if you will, lack of previous experience in other, such public offices. And, he's certainly, I would say, one of the three who could walk away with the party's nomination after next Tuesday.
Do you think that, a lot of these candidates in this race, have had obviously some issues with money and getting their name out there. Do you think that enough of the voters actually know who Rand Knight is?
That would be a serious drawback to his campaign is, lack of name recognition. But, speaking from my own experience, we invited for our membership dinner back in January the announced candidates at that time, and he was the first to respond, and he was the first to arrive there that evening. He worked the room. He put out his campaign materials. And he built a small base of support in Floyd County with just one night's stop. So, not having the flashy commercials and not having, I would say, the money to compete with some other top-tier candidates, I think he's made up for that in small person-to-person contacts, and if that can carry over, if the local parties really still have any pull whatsoever, we'll find out on Election Day on the 15th.
Last week, of course, we discussed a lot and devoted a lot of the show to Jim Martin's candidacy, and as we discussed last week, he got in pretty late. Now we see that he is running TV ads, blanketing television statewide. Would something like that be enough to, say, get Martin into a runoff, do you think?
You know, Jim Martin's doing what he has to do at this juncture of the campaign, getting in so late. And he is trying to reach back out to the voters who supported him in his failed bid to become lieutenant governor in 2006. But, you know, as much as he's doing that, Jim Martin is not a Kathy Cox. He's not a Mark Taylor or Roy Barnes in that he's held a statewide office in the past. And, you know, he's gotten a majority of the Georgia voters to support him in a campaign in that way in the past. You know, I would think that as far as fundraising ability and this last-ditch advertising, it's certainly a possibility. I would say that Martin is one of those three candidates who could emerge after Tuesday in a runoff.
We have another caller with us now. Let me see who this is. Hello, caller.
Hello, good evening. How y'all doing?
Who are you, sir?
My name is Jim Powell. I'm supposed to be on the next
call. Yes, sir. Mr. Powell, we are waiting on your opponent to call in, so we're going to leave you on the air and continue to talk for a couple of minutes. And when your opponent joins us, then we'll begin our forum.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Back to what we were talking about here, Scott. Vernon Jones is another one making some news in this U.S. Senate race. He has obviously put out some print advertising with Barack Obama, and we're going to stop right there because I believe our another caller. Hello, caller.
Hello. This is Bob Indek, the other caller.
All right, Mr. Indek. Our two guests are now Mr. Jim Powell and Mr. Bob Indek. Gentlemen, this is Tim, and I'll be starting off this forum. Now, this is a simple question and answer forum, and we ask that the candidates address the questioner and not each other because this is not a debate. And with that, I'll ask the first question, and welcome to the Kudzu Vine, by the way.
Thank you.
The first question, we like to start with people who have never been on the Kudzu Vine before by asking them, and would each of you please give our listeners a little background and biographical info, beginning with you, Mr. Powell.
Okay, well, hey, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to do this, and greetings to all the listeners out there. This is my first time ever to run for office. You know, I'm somewhat of a novice, a rookie at this, but I've learned a lot. I retired last year from the U.S. Department of Energy. I was formerly the regional director in Atlanta when the Southeast Regional Office was located in Atlanta. And then I was also a national program manager in Washington for a while. I spent 20 years with the Department of Energy, energy programs and energy policy, mostly with the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. So that's my primary focus. Prior to that, I was at the Savannah River site, which is part of the nuclear weapons complex for the Department of Energy. I was there for 5 years. I was the finance director there. And prior to that, I worked as a civilian employee with the U.S. Navy in Jacksonville, Florida, London, England, and in Washington, D.C. I have just almost finished here, and I'll give it back to you.
Oh, okay.
I got 4 years of military service with the Navy. When I retired in February 2007, I decided to move to Hiawassee, Georgia. And I'm proud of my 35 years of service to our country.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Indek.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your show. My name is Bob Indek. I'm currently a practicing engineer I decided to run for the Public Service Commission after Angela Speer, who has served as well as an honest public servant, decided not to run for re-election in my district. My background is primarily in engineering. I've been a registered professional engineer for the last 25 years in three states, the last 20 years of which in Georgia. I have degrees and credentials in electrical engineering and mechanical engineering, as well as business administration. My previous work in this field has been for the federal government. I was chief of power and lighting for the United States Navy in Boston for some time, and chief of process engineering for the United States Army in Corpus Christi, Texas. I'm currently engaged in research and development on energy-related devices, and my entire stance for this job has been one of technical expertise, which I hope to be able to use most efficiently for the people of Georgia. Thank you.
All right, and the next question is simply, should either of you be elected, what would you identify and make your number one priority as a member of the PSC? And this time we'll start with you, Mr. Inde.
Well, the Public Service Commission is not a rubber stamp commission for the electric companies or for natural gas. Even though at present close to 85% of our electric power is derived from coal-driven plants, my first priority would have to be to try to get us to diversify the mix. We have to start getting into alternative energy, wind power, solar power, anything but our rapidly escalating costs associated with fossil fuels. This would be my major priority.
Okay, and Mr. Powell, what would be your number one priority if you were elected?
Well, Tim, you're really going to make me choose because I got about five number one priorities.
Okay.
First and foremost, I intend to be a consumer advocate on the commission. I think with the departure of the person that's vacating this seat, the consumer really won't have an advocate there. So I want to make sure that that every rate case that's submitted by every investor-owned utility in the state of Georgia gets a fair hearing in front of the commission. We understand that the ratepayers should get a fair and affordable rate, but also we also understand that these investor-owned utilities have responsibilities to their shareholders. So they're in business to make a profit. So we want to make sure that there's a fair and equitable hearing for every rate case that's presented to the commission, and the consumer will be foremost in my mind all the time.
Okay. Now, I got to tell both of you that I've been checking around and I've checked out both of your websites, and so I'm going to ask each of you a question about something I read on your website. And this time I'll begin with you, Mr. Powell. Could you please explain to our listeners the term fuel source diversity and why that's so important to consumers?
Well, my opponent just made a reference to the amount of energy that we generate in Georgia using fossil fuels, primarily coal. And so I think it's important that we should not rely, put all of our eggs in one basket, which is what we've done with coal. And it's time to mix it up a bit. We need to look at, in my estimation, all the fuel sources have to be on the table. And coal is obviously on the table, but we need to introduce some alternative forms of energy. We need to take a hard look at solar. We need to take a hard look at wind. We need to look at biomass and look at incorporating that into the fuel mix. Biomass is probably our most abundant renewable resource in the state of Georgia. And, we haven't really done a good job as far as looking at renewable fuels. My background, my 20 years with the Department of Energy, was primarily in renewable energy and energy efficiency. We also need to take a hard look at energy efficiency. We haven't really done that. We haven't done that well in Georgia. We can do more. And Georgia Power has not had any incentive to promote energy efficiency. Some utilities in our sister states are saying that you can even replace the next fossil fuel plant through energy efficiency measures throughout your state. Now, I'm not going so far as to advocate that, but I think it's something we need to take a look at.
Okay. Now, Mr. Endek, on your site, you mentioned in one section some issues with cell phone companies. What would you change about cell phone service in Georgia if you're elected?
Well, cell phone service is not specifically under the regulation of the Public Service Commission, and I apologize. I'm looking up my website and even as we speak, and it might give the impression that it is, but it isn't. Basically, the Public Service Commission regulates landline telephones, so I can't change anything with cell phones in Georgia.
Okay, understood. Also with us tonight, gentlemen, we have Scott Aitman and we have Catherine Smith, and so I'm going to turn it over to them to ask a few questions, and then they'll send it back to me to end this forum up. Scott, go ahead, please, sir.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening, Scott.
Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm a resident of Rome, Georgia, and the rivers that run through Rome are near and dear to my heart, and certainly the water that that makes those rivers available to us. I want to pose a question to both of you, and I'll ask that Mr. Powell go first. Right now, we are suffering a drought in North Georgia, and, of course, you know, the drought is not going to last forever, and I expect that, you know, here before long, we're going to get an abundance of rainfall. Are any of our dams throughout North Georgia in any danger if we do get torrential rains, if possibly giving like others have in the Midwest? And if so, would now be a good time for us to seek federal assistance to possibly reinforce such structures and to have a more modern water program throughout the state?
Well, okay, I'll certainly give that a shot. And I think the water issue is incredibly important, Scott, and I think it's great that you brought that question to our listeners. A lot of folks don't know that generating energy is the largest consumer of water in the state of Georgia. Depending on the technology, it takes anywhere from a half gallon to 5 gallons of water to generate a kilowatt of electricity. I mean, that's something that we need to be mindful of, and that discussion doesn't come up a lot when we start talking about our scarce water resources in the state. Regarding dams in particular, the ones that in the state of Georgia are owned by Georgia Power, and I'm not aware of any safety issues with those dams. It's something I think we certainly should take a look at. I think it should be on our list of things to review as far as the commission is concerned, because we know there are some issues out there with our infrastructure, our nation's infrastructure, and I think dam safety is something that we should certainly take a hard look at, and that would be something that the commission could bring to the forefront.
All right, thank you. Mr. Endek?
Well, that's certainly true. The safety of our dams is absolutely critical, but I wanted to comment a bit more on the use of water in the generation of electricity, and more importantly, just why are our lakes down so much. Just consider, we are in a drought situation, and we haven't gotten as much rain as we'd like, for sure. On the other hand, we're letting downstream altogether far too much water. And the reason we're letting it, particularly out of the Chattahoochee Basin and Lake Lanier, is because there's a number of very old coal-fired plants on the far downstream end that operate on what's called single-pass water cooling and require a substantial amount of water to flow past them in order to be able to operate. Now, the modern plants that we have, like Plant Vogel and some of the other modern plants actually have cooling ponds associated with them, so they don't need this type of downstream flow. Just to give you a rough idea and the other listeners, for every single watt of electricity that we can generate, we need to dissipate about 3 watts of heat. That's an awful lot of downstream water. So if we can modernize these plants, we can substantially reduce this need for downstream water and basically begin to fill our lakes up. Now, this doesn't address the specific issue that you brought out as a listener on the safety of the dams, but it will certainly help the water supply in northern Georgia.
All right. Thank you very much. The next question I have, and I read this off of one of your websites, is this relates to natural gas, that we have a number of providers, but really in terms of where those providers get their natural gas, that's a monopoly. And, you know, if this is the case, as public service commissioner, are you going to look for new avenues to bring natural gas into the state of Georgia to make it more competitive for our state's residents? And if so, how would you go about that? And, Mr. Indecht, I'll pose that question to you first.
Well, up until recently, natural gas in the entire supply chain to our consumers has been a total monopoly. The legislature decided in their infinite wisdom to create a competitive situation for the gas marketers, but the supply itself through Atlanta Gaslight is still a monopoly. Your question is, how do we make it more inviting for other gas suppliers to enter the market? Basically, the United States is a competitive market, and if other gas suppliers saw that there was an availability to make a huge profit, believe me, they would be rushing in. That's the key to the whole thing. You know, we're not a communist state. We're a competitive market, and I have seen personally that the variable rate of gas right now, of natural gas, is almost 50% higher than it was this same time last year. And I'm sure that this fact is not escaping the attention of our national gas producers.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Powell?
Yeah. You know, boy, I tell you, wouldn't it be great if we could put that natural gas deregulation genie back in the bottle? You know, a lot of just so unhappy with what happened in the deregulation of the natural gas industry, at least on the retail side here in the state of Georgia. Regarding additional supply, you know, that's a really great question, because we got pipelines that flow through the state that come in from Louisiana and Texas, and that's where most of the natural gas comes from. A couple of weeks ago, I was down at Atlanta Gas Light introducing myself to some of the executives at Atlanta Gas Light Company, the resource side of it, and they were telling me about an issue they had with the Public Service Commission a year or so ago, where they wanted to build a pipeline from Elba Island to the Atlanta area, which that would carry liquefied natural gas that would be imported probably from Trinidad. And the commission would not permit Atlanta Gas Light to recover the cost of that pipeline through the rate structure. And I need to find out more about that. I've heard Atlanta Gas Light side of the story. I'd like to find out what actually happened on the commission, because that sure sounds like something that we should do that would bring additional natural gas, whether it be liquefied or otherwise, into the state. Right now, that's the natural gas that's coming into Elba Island is going to Florida as opposed to coming to Georgia.
All right. Thank you very much. My last question I have for both you gentlemen concerns transportation. And, you know, Rome's certainly grown in the 23 years that I've lived here, and we're continuing to pay as we go to build a bypass around the city of Rome. My wife is from Snellville, Georgia, and 20 years ago or so that we first met, that little farm town is no longer what it was, and it seems like so much of that beautiful countryside is now covered in you know, materials, either to build new mini malls or put more pavement down. But we do have a serious problem here in North Georgia, especially those of us traveling above Atlanta. I know that we're going to have to build more highways, but as a commissioner, what would you do to ease the transportation problem, but yet not at the expense of our beautiful North Georgia hills and mountains? And, Mr. Powell, I'll give that question to you first.
Wow. You know, if I had the answer to that, I probably would be on the board of the Department of Transportation. You know, the transportation issue that comes under the purview of the Public Service Commission deals primarily with movers and haulers, limos, wreckers, and things such as that. The transportation per se, you know, mass transit, whether it be rail or bus, does not come under the purview of the Public Service Commission. So, you know, maybe that question would be better directed to some of our friends down at the Department of Transportation, or maybe my opponent has an answer to that question that I don't have.
All right. Mr. Indeck.
Well, in this regard, Mr. Powell is essentially correct. Basically, all the Georgia Public Service Commission does is it assumes responsibility for the certification and enforcement of regulations for household goods movers, luxury limousine carriers, buses, motor carriers, and what's called non-consensual towing, in other words, tow trucks. So any solutions to the highway or transportation problems in North Georgia are certainly not within the purview of the Public Service Commission. It's just not there.
All right. That
would be a question for the guys down at the Georgia Regional Transportation Authority and for the Department of Transportation.
All right. Phil?
Catherine, do you have any questions for our guests?
I do. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on here with us this evening. We really appreciate it. I'm going to start with Mr. Powell, but I'd like you both to answer this question. Mr. Powell, you mentioned when you were talking about various energy sources that we should look at, you were talking about other neighbor states that are concentrating on conservation in order to avoid having to build additional plants. And I think that that's a really important thing. And I'm concerned, as a business owner and as a consumer, I certainly understand the way the power companies are structured, there really is no advantage for them to encourage conservation. And it seems to me that as well as looking at the, you know, water problem that we have, it seems to me that trying to find a path to conservation that will still allow our energy companies to thrive and satisfy their shareholders should be a really should be a top priority for the Public Service Commission, because it seems to me that that certainly is the path to lowering our energy footprint as well as keeping the costs contained. What ideas do you have about encouraging conservation while still allowing our companies to thrive?
Catherine, a great question. I'd like to talk about conservation and also talk about energy efficiency. Conservation to me is doing the smart thing, turning the lights off, you know, adjusting the thermostat, things such as that. Energy efficiency is incorporating technology, using Energy Star appliances, making buildings, both residential buildings and commercial buildings, more energy efficient, such as low-E windows, better insulation, tighter buildings, making industrial processes more energy efficient. So I think we need to distinguish between the two, because conservation is something that we should practice. That's kind of a common sense thing. Actually, so is energy efficiency. But there are ways, and we don't have the time tonight to get into the details of how it can happen, but there are ways that we can create incentives for our electric utilities to add energy efficiency to the mix, to offer energy efficiency to the customers. That can be built into the rate structure, and we can somehow incentivize the utilities where they can actually promote energy efficiency. Georgia Power right now does not have any incentive to do that. But that's something I really think we need to take a hard look at. If you look at what some of the other states have done, If you look at the Northeast, which I don't say we should use the Northeast U.S. and California as examples, but, you know, there have been some pretty progressive, innovative things done, new technologies brought in, and I think we need to take a real hard look at that and look beyond where we are now, but where do we need to be 10 years from now?
I absolutely agree with you. But, again, how do you – I mean, our energy companies are – I mean, their bottom line is based on power use. So how do you do that? I think about it a lot, and it's true of water as well. You know,
it is.
Here I live in Atlanta, so we have this, you know, big water shortage, that water, you know, crisis. So we all conserved water over the last, you know, 8 months, and then because we conserved all this water, the water department didn't get enough money, so now our rates are going to go up after we've been conserving. And I'm not arguing that that's the way, that kind of has to happen, because they have to have a certain amount of revenue to function. But I'm really interested in what kind of structure you could create that would allow energy conservation, which I think is absolutely important, energy conservation and energy efficiency. I'm serious. How do we do that? How do we make sure that Georgia Power is still a thriving part of our economy while we're using less power?
We have to make it an incentive. We have to somehow encourage Georgia Power to do it through the rate case. When they submit a rate case to the commission, somehow the commission is going to have to be able to incorporate incentives in the rate structure for Georgia Power to promote energy efficiency. Now, there's something in the law, there's a law on the books passed in the early 90s that requires Georgia Power to develop an integrated resource plan every 3 years and update it. The commission has to review and approve that. That does not get a lot of attention. Energy efficiency is one of the items that they have to address. But it's, on the other hand, the commission is not giving the utility, Georgia Power, incentives to promote energy efficiency, and that's what we need to look at. What options are available? We need to look at how we can do that. What is best for the state of Georgia? Because there are some ways out there to incorporate energy efficiency into the rate structure. Right now, the way it is structured is that for every kilowatt they produce and sell over the rate case is profit.
Mr. Indyk, what's your take on this efficiency and conservation?
Well, first thing we have to realize is that Georgia is growing. And this is not a case of simply supplying a constant amount of electricity to Georgia. It's a case of supplying ever-increasing amounts of electricity to Georgia. We're contemplating adding two new nuclear units to the plant, to Plant Vogtle, in order to accomplish this. But it's always less expensive to produce electricity from older units than it is to create newer units. So in point of fact, if Georgia Power will encourage conservation measures, or if we in the Public Service Commission can use a bully pulpit and rate structure to encourage Georgia Power to encourage conservation measures, then in point of fact, their profit relative to their costs will tend to increase. This is good for them. It's also good for us. Most conservation measures that I have seen are actually quite inexpensive. For homeowners, we are talking about compact fluorescents. We're talking about better insulation. We're talking about programmable thermostats. For industrial users, certainly the compact fluorescence is a very big issue. But as Jim said, and I agree with him, we've got to utilize the rate structure as both a carrot and a stick for this monopoly power supplier to be able to aid consumers in doing the type of retrofitting that would actually reduce individual consumption of electricity. Now, this isn't to say that the overall consumption of electricity may not go down because we're constantly adding more people and more businesses. But the individual bills, hopefully through conservation, will go down, and we will still be able to give this monopoly supplier a more than adequate profit for their endeavors.
Thank you very much. I don't have any other questions for you guys, but I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to learning more about what you have to offer. I'm sorry, I just came in from out of town. So,
thank you, Catherine.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, this was touched on much earlier when we first started this forum, but I want to come back to it and ask you about it. For a long, long time, Georgia voters have been, for lack of a better word, I want to use the word suspicious of the Public Service Commission. Many voters think that the PSC always does the bidding of the utility companies. How could you convince the public that this is not the case? And let me start with you, Mr. Indett.
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, and in the past, I certainly would agree with that sentiment, particularly at a time when the officials on the Public Service Commission were simply appointed by the governor, and when the people basically had no say in their elections. It's a different story now. You know, people do have the ability to vote. Public Service Commission's commissioners are on their job for 6 years, and there's five commissioners, and they basically rotate their terms. So to have commissioners basically be toadies of the utility companies, we can do something about it. We can simply vote them out. That's the first thing we the public can do now that we couldn't do 20 years ago. The best way to illustrate to the public that the commission are not simply in the figuratively in the pockets of the utilities is to encourage the utilities to do consumer-friendly actions, perhaps to set up funds for rebating some of these conservation measures that I recently talked about, that people could actually do. People could actually get some money back. We have certain types of programs from Atlanta Gas, I know right now, for tankless water heaters, for more efficient furnaces, and these are good, but they can be certainly expanded a great deal more. That's about it.
Okay, Mr. Powell, same question.
Okay, I think I remember the question. How can we fix the broken Public Service Commission? The views of the public.
Right.
Viewed from the public. I think first thing you need to do, a good step in that direction would be to vote for me on July the 15th and again on November the 4th, because I think I would be a move in the right direction. Right now all five commissioners are Republicans, and not that partisan politics comes into play, but I think we all know partisan politics does come into play in everything, particularly when you have elected office. I think more movement, and this is going to require action on the part of the General Assembly, to get rid of the private discussions that the commissioners continue to have one-on-one with the investor-owned utilities. Something that we need, discussions need to be open to the public out front. Other states don't do it. Georgia doesn't need to do it. I think that would go a long way towards changing the commission and making it an open commission, a commission for the people of Georgia. And, those are the best things. One of the things that I'm particularly known for, a skill that I developed over my 35 years of service to our country, is my ability to bring folks together from different perspectives and try to develop a consensus and a path forward. And that's what I hope to do when I get to the commission. I hope to be able to work with those folks, the four Republican commissioners that will be there, and work towards the mission of the Public Service Commission, as well as work towards what's in the best interest of the citizens of Georgia. I think I bring a lot of good ideas, new and innovative ideas that the commission hasn't either wanted to try or tried before, and I intend to make sure that those get in the forefront.
Okay. And before we close our forum out, there's one more thing I'd like for both of you to do. I'd like to ask each of you to give a brief closing statement, and in that closing statement, if you could please include any contact information for our listeners who might like to help out in your campaigns, and we will begin with you, Mr. Ende.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you. I have a website, www.citizensforbob.com, which outlines some of my qualifications and my positions on the issues that we have before us. Basically, if we consider what simply went on last week when the Atlanta judge stopped the construction of a coal-fired plant because it didn't have the requisite number of carbon scrubbers, it would appear to me that the commissioners that initially approved this plant didn't seem to have the correct technical education to know that this sort of thing was required and was wanted. So, to me, being able to understand the technical nature of electricity, natural gas, and other issues that the Public Service Commission deals with is critical to being able to do a good job for the people of Georgia. I can be reached directly at my home phone number, which is 770-447-4453. I can be reached by email at rindec@hotmail.com, and I would be more than happy to speak with anyone regarding any of the things that I've written or any of these positions. I believe that I'm the best qualified person to serve on this commission, and I hope I get your vote on the primary and in the general election. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Powell.
Okay, thank you, Tim. First of all, my contact information. The best way to reach me is by email, and my email address is jimpowell4gapsc@gmail.com. All one word, jimpowell4gapsc@gmail.com. My website, jimpowell4gapsc.com. My cell phone number is the best way to reach me because I'm not home very much, is 706-970-0823, and mailing address is P.O. Box 273, Hiawassee, Georgia 30546, just in case some folks want to send some checks. Anyway, one of the things that we need to keep in mind is Georgia is continuing to grow, and our demand is increasing, and whatever we do, we're going to need to either reduce the consumption somehow, and that's not going to be likely because we are growing, people are moving, continue to move into the state. But we need to look at other ways to do things regarding electricity. And we talked a lot about those earlier. We talked about energy efficiency, which I think is probably the first thing we ought to look at, and we ought to look at other options for renewable energy. I'm not going to dwell those anymore, but I think that's some things that we can do to somehow mitigate the growing demand. The good thing about renewable energy, it uses fuel sources that are indigenous to the state of Georgia. It keeps the dollars in Georgia. It creates jobs in Georgia, and it's good for the Georgia economy. Instead of sending the dollars to West Virginia, Colorado, or even the Middle East, it keeps them here in the good state of Georgia. The primary distinction between my opponent and myself is that he thinks it's a technical job, and I think it's a policy job. And we're just going to agree to disagree on that until July 15th. The PSC has a marvelous staff of folks up there. They have a competent staff of engineers, rate analysts, economists, attorneys, 100 people, actually, career employees on the Public Service Commission. So, you know, I don't have a technical background. My background, my education is in accounting, and I have a master's in business. But I have the experience in the energy arena, in the energy industry, in the federal government to bring to bear the policy expertise that's needed, that's so critical to the state of Georgia. If I need technical work, I'm going to have the staff do that for me, and I need to understand the big picture, and I will do that. I have the ability to do that. But I managed a staff of 80 people that included all those professions I just mentioned. I've had lawyers and engineers work for me over the years. I get along great with them, but I trust their judgment. So anyway, that's our, you know, we're going to continue to disagree about whether or not it's a policy job or whether or not it's a technical job, and we'll let the voters answer that come July the 15th.
Okay, and that will be the last word in this forum. Gentlemen, thank you both for being on the Kudzu Vine. I'd like to say good luck to both of you on July the 15th, and good luck to the winner in November. And we'd like to thank you for being with us and wish you both a good night.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay. That was very interesting, very good. You know, we don't get to hear a lot from candidates for the Public Service Commission, and I don't think even the voters realize how important a group like that is. In the last few minutes that we are on here, I did want to make sure we had time. I wanted to save a little time here to talk about this. 2 years ago, probably the closest state representative race in Georgia was in District 13 between Katie Dempsey and Bob Puckett. Dempsey won by 168 votes. That's 0.2%. And this year there'll be a rematch. And Scott, I want to turn to you and ask you about this, since this one is in your county. So our listeners would know, because there's no way they could keep up with all the representative districts in Georgia. Tell us about District 13 and exactly where it's located and everything.
All right. District 13 is the city limits of Rome. So the entire district is made up of the entire city of Rome. No part of the city is left in or outside of it. No part of it is excluded. So whoever represents that district there in the General Assembly really, truly is the only voice Rome has outside of the Senate.
Now, being it's a district that is entirely in the city of Rome, would you say that would tend to make that district a little more democratic than Floyd County, where you live, or less?
Absolutely. The district until Katie Dempsey was elected had been, you know, held literally since Reconstruction by Democrats, most recently for well over two decades by Paul Smith. But Smith is a conservative, or was a conservative Democrat, and sometimes he was known to vote with the Republicans in the General Assembly. In fact, you know, he got that little nickname, Georgia's version of, if you will, John McCain. He was a maverick. And although I would say the city of Rome is less conservative or better chance of being Democrat than Republican in the county, it still has a strong conservative, if you will, flavor to it.
Okay. Sometimes, you know, rematches are not what the original hot race was. What about this rematch 2 years later? Is this race going to be, or does it have the potential to be as close as the one 2 years ago?
Well, it has the potential. I mean, usually, you know, if you go and you look, a rematch is historically or not as close the second time around. Whether you're looking at, for instance, Adlai Stevenson's two failed attempts to defeat Dwight Eisenhower, or, you know, any contest, whether it's state, national, or local. However, this is going to be a strong Democratic year, and the Democrats in Floyd County, as well as elsewhere throughout the state, are expecting to have a higher turnout than years prior. That magnifies itself when you consider that the district's been targeted by both the Republican House leadership and the Democratic House leadership. Both sides are going to invest a lot of money. The Democrats seem to think this is where the Republicans are their most vulnerable, and they recognize this. In fact, you know, Ms. Dempsey's held several public meetings to inform her constituents of what the lame duck legislature claims they did for the city of Rome. And she, you know, she brings up the brass, if you will. She certainly in her first meeting had, you know, the House Majority Leader there, and I'm very interested to see who she brings to these last two events because, you know, she can only duck from the voters for so long. And Katie's a nice woman. I have nothing to say bad about her in terms of personality, but she is not representing the city of Rome as an independent voice and the legislature. And I think nothing, you know, underscores that more when the leadership comes up here to defend her.
Huh. And we did want to let our listeners know that hopefully in a couple of weeks down the road, we're going to have either Dr. Puckett or Dr. Puckett's campaign manager on with us. And we thank you, Scott, for that good information. I want to turn to you, Catherine, about something down your way as well. We touched on this before on the kudzu vine, but John Lewis is a man that's near and dear to all of our hearts, and I know you know him quite well and know his work quite well. And for the first time, he has two Democratic opponents. Could you fill the listeners in on how that race is going?
Well, I haven't seen any polling. I don't think there has been any. But I think John, you know, Congressman Lewis is a strong candidate. He's been a leader on so many things for so long, and all of us in his district, I think even those people who support his opponents, have a lot of respect for him. And he's been really working very hard since he drew these opponents to get the votes of his constituents. I just saw a picture of him today where he was mowing someone's lawn. He was out canvassing, and there was an elderly gentleman who needed his lawn mowed, so he took the lawnmower for a spin around the gentleman's front yard, which I thought was I think that was an effort to decry the claims that Congressman Lewis is old and out of touch with the voters in his district. I think that there's I've read a little bit about some of the things that people are challenging him about. Some of it is, I think, very complicated legislation related to Grady and to public housing. I think those are two issues that have come up in this campaign that are of concern to some of the more progressive or left-leaning Democrats in the district, which I usually count myself among. But I have so much respect for Congressman Lewis, I have to believe that the way he voted on that was because they were very complicated issues that we may not understand all the background for that explain his vote. I also think that Congressman Lewis's early support of Senator Clinton was looked on by some of his constituents who were supporters of Senator Obama. And, of course, Senator Obama won a very big victory in District 5, Congressional District 5. So I think that, you know, Congressman Lewis was quite quick to announce that he was supporting Senator Obama because his constituents supported him so handily. And I think that we can all respect his early support of Senator Clinton. As a Clinton supporter, I appreciated it. But I also understand his response to the, you know, unexpected, you know, groundswell of support that Senator Obama got. So I have to say that my comment about this race is always that after all the work that Congressman Lewis has done from the the time he was 17 years old and walking across the bridge at Selma, to, you know, 2 weeks ago voting against the FISA bill. After all this work, I just think it would be the ultimate sad irony for him to be voted out of his congressional seat at the same time we elect our first African-American president. And I just, I support him, and I've been supporting him, and I hope that he will prevail. I have confidence that he will, but I sure hope that he will, if only for the historical nature of this election.
What about the young voters in that district, Catherine? Do you think they have a sense of what John Lewis has meant to something like the civil rights movement, even though
I think a lot of them do. I was at the High Museum, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, for a Young Democrats of Atlanta event. They had a pledge to vote table set up for the happy hour, the Friday jazz happy hour at the High Museum, and the exhibit at the High Museum right now is photographs from the civil rights movement, and if you walk through that exhibit, John Lewis is in about half of those photographs. And they also have on display his arrest records from when he got arrested in the various, demonstrations and rallies and marches that he participated in the early days of the civil rights movement. And then, of course, pictures of the March on Washington. And it's really a remarkable exhibit, but his presence is unavoidable, noticing his presence. And he was actually there that evening, and I walked through the exhibit before he did, but as I was finishing the exhibit, I heard a little ruckus behind me, and I turned around, and there were a whole group of young people walking with Congressman Lewis through the exhibit as he was explaining what was happening in each of these photographs. And it was really moving. And I can't imagine that it wasn't moving to those young people who were there to witness this really remarkable moment. I mean, it was really amazing that we had the good fortune, to be able to walk with this icon, hero of so many, as he explained the activities in so many of these photographs from, 40 years ago. 50.
Yeah, and I can share with you both, even though we on the kudzu vine do not endorse one Democrat over another. I got to tell you, both my heart will be with Representative Lewis on Election Day.
Well, we may not as a group on kudzu vine endorse candidates, but I think there's a lot of people who just, I mean, we have all have a lot of respect for him, and I would like to give him, I think that he still has a lot to give and a lot of service to provide to the District 5, Congressional District 5.
Amen. And the old clock tells us that another episode of the Kudzu Vine is over in about 1 minute, so I want to wrap it up by thanking you, Catherine, and thanking you, Scott, for both really doing yeoman's work in the absence of David. David who, right, Scott?
That's right, David who.
David who, and David will be back next week with me and Catherine. And Scott, don't you be a stranger, you hear?
Yeah, we like having you on here, Scott.
Yeah, really?
Hey, invite me back anytime.
All right, good night, folks.
Good night, folks.
Good night.